It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic biological nature of events as they relate to climate. And we are midsummer. We are at the hottest part of the summer. Interestingly, the coldest part of winter is right around the 25th, 26th of January. And the hottest part of summer is right around the 25th, 26th of July. And we are right there, although the weather's cooperating with us right now. It's not too hot and shouldn't be for the next couple of days, but we are at that point of the year. And you all know that the coldest day in Minnesota was February 2nd. So that was about a week after what should have been the coldest day of the year. And of course, on that day, it got down to 60 below zero. Yeah, just 140 degrees colder than it's going to be today. Around the area, some of the things that I've been watching, aside from all of the beautiful dragonflies and butterflies that are out bounding about, it's a pretty exciting time for them. I've seen the widow pennant or the widow skimmer and the 12-spotted skimmer and the calico pennant, and I've seen a few darners and just all sorts of dragonflies and butterflies. So still a few mourning cloaks out. I saw one. My sister saw one this past week. This mourning cloak that we see this time of year will be probably the one that will fly into fall and will overwinter as an adult. And then in the spring, it'll be one of the first butterflies we'll see in the spring, and it will buzz around for a bit and lay an egg on some willows somewhere, and the next thing you know, there'll be another brand new, freshly minted mourning cloak just about this time next year. There's a flower out there right now that is blooming that looks a lot like a dandelion. And I guess in that sense, it probably looks a little bit like hawkweed as well. But this one's fairly tall, sometimes 3, 4, 5 feet tall. And if you look at it, it has leaves like a thistle, but flowers like a dandelion. So it's got this bright yellow flower at the top, and it's got these heavily lobed leaves that have these little, they look like prickers, like you would find on a thistle, but they are not. They have a little bit of a pointed end on them, but they don't have much starch, so you can kind of rub against the field sow thistle without fear of getting poked the way you would if you rubbed against a bull thistle or a Canada thistle. Sow thistle is not at all in the thistle family. It's a sonchus. And it is, as I mentioned, fairly tall. It's going to look like a cluster of large sunflowers out there in the middle of nowhere. And what you're looking at is probably field sow thistle. Other things I've been watching, the thimbleberry, which is not a common plant in Itasca County. And I don't know if it runs west into Beltrami and Crow Wing. I don't know if it's in those areas. It's prevalent along the shores of Lake Superior. And as you go into the uplands along Lake Superior, the common undergrowth plant where we would have raspberry, they have thimbleberry. And there is a small patch of thimbleberry up in the northern part of the county that I drive by frequently, and there are berries, and they are just like last year, I would say, insipid. I don't know, something about thimbleberry. It has a flavor, but not much of a flavor. It's not as dynamic to me as a blackberry or a raspberry, but it's okay. It's not bad. Just, I don't know. If somebody offered me thimbleberry pie, no doubt I would eat it, but probably would rather have raspberry. A little bit stronger flavor. I've been playing in the bogs, and one of my favorite bog sort of things is to watch for the flowers of the round-leaved sundew. Now, the round-leaved sundew is one of those insectivorous plants. It's got tiny, tiny leaves. The leaves are a quarter inch across, and each leaf is ringed with these little hairs, and each of those little hairs has a little drop of a kind of an enzyme, sort of a gluey substance on it. And insects come in and think that they're going to get some nectar, and they get stuck to those little gobs of goo. And then the plant, that enzyme on that end of that little filament, will seep through the skin of the insect that's trapped there and turn the insides into a milkshake. And then the plant will withdraw it through that same little tendril that's holding up that little gob of goo. And it will ingest that and use that energy to help it survive. And it's just one of the many ways that plants that grow in bogs have adapted to survive in that area. Now, the flower is it's not even a quarter of an inch across. It's probably an eighth of an inch across. And it has five petals, and it's white, and it grows on a kind of a filament that comes up about 5 or 6 inches and hooks over like a little shepherd's crook. So think of your little Bo Peep's arts drawing, and think of the shepherd's crook that little Bo Peep carried. And that shape is essentially the flower structure of the round-leaved sundew. Along the roads going into my house, I have been watching the goldenrods bloom. The early goldenrod is at full bloom right now. The Canada goldenrod is just beginning to bloom, and the flat-topped goldenrod is beginning to bloom. And as well as asters, the smooth blue aster has begun to bloom. And the flat-topped aster is blooming, as is the large-leafed aster. Now, the smooth blue aster has leaves that kind of clasp the stem and has a smooth stem. And the large-leafed aster has a blue flower. But the blue flower on the large-leafed aster looks as though somebody's gone in and plucked out some of the rays. So on both of these asters, they're composite flowers. They have the flower is actually the yellow or brown or red part in the middle. And the rays around it are simply to attract insects. So you get these blue asters. And if you look at the smooth blue aster, the rays are nice and evenly spaced. And, you know, for every openings, there's a ray. And you might have 20 or 30 of these rays sticking out around the center of this flower. In the case of the large leafed aster, you have, maybe 10 or 15 of these rays. And there are gaps, as though someone has gone along and pulled some of the rays out of there. So check them out. The other thing is the smooth blue asters tend to be up on sandy soils and in the middle of open areas, and the large-leafed asters tend to favor the woods. So you can find them back in the woods. Boneset and Joe Pieweed are both blooming. And these are Eupatorium, and Eupatorium simply means wool-like or wool-gathering. So the flower of the boneset and the flower of the Joe Pieweed, when it flowers even, it looks kind of woolly, but as it goes to seed, it really looks woolly. So both of those flowers are in bloom. Boneset, of course, if you look at the leaves, they join together at the base, so they're opposite branched. That is, if there's a leaf on the left, there'll be a leaf on the right, and the two come together, the base of those two leaves come together and knit themselves together, and so the name boneset, as though if it could do that, if you laid it on a broken leg, it would heal the broken leg. That has been disproved, by the way. Boneset is not a cure for broken legs. The other thing I've noticed, besides all those lovely flowers blooming along my driveway and along the road that I drive down to get into town, Well, of course, the tall woodland sunflower is another flower, a big yellow flower that's blooming along there. But the eastern kingbirds have brought their brood out to the edge of the road and are hawking insects off of whatever fence posts they can find. And the kingbird is that gray bird, has a white belly and a white band on the end of its tail. And they're very, very aggressive birds. They are among the most aggressive birds of the birds, because they just don't tolerate any intrusion into their territory by another bird, especially something large. I once watched as a kingbird sat on the back of a crow and pecked at the back of its head while the crow was in flight. And the instant the crow landed, the kingbird disappeared. And they're small and maneuverable, so no fear of being chased by the crow. It's like picking the biggest kid in the schoolyard and, you know, teasing him until he gets mad and starts to chase you, and then proceeding to outrun him and outturn him and just stay away from him. But the kingbird have brought their family to the edge of the road, and I'm seeing four or five kingbirds in a group, and they're just definitely having a good time. In the woods, the bunch berries are getting redder, as are the berries of the blue bead lily. Neither of those is, well, the bunch berry is edible, but like the thimbleberry, it's not one of my favorites. It's got very little sugar in it and not much taste. And the blue bead lily is to be avoided altogether. That one has calcium oxalate in it, which is a very painful drug to have in your mouth. You don't want to eat the blue bead lily at all. Indian pipe is up and blooming. I mentioned the smooth aster, which is blooming. The ruby-throated hummingbirds, they have brought their babies to the nest, or to the feeders, and now we're filling our feeders at least twice a day, and sometimes more often, depending on the activity. So they're really, really starting to hang out at the feeders right now. In the edges of the swamps, the low bush blueberries are blooming quite actively. My dog and I were out for a walk the other day, and all of a sudden she disappeared into the woods right alongside the road and jumped up seven young ruffed grouse, all of them about the size of a robin or a little bigger, all of them perfectly capable of flight. And up into the trees they went, and I sat there for a minute and watched them kind of looking around. They were talking to one another and wondering where mom was, and the dog, of course, was running around underneath them, just nose to the ground. What's all this good smell? So fun to see some ruffed grouse. Looks like I'll have a few for the fall anyway. They're safe at my house. I seldom shoot ruffed grouse. They're just a little too quick for me, I guess. I had a sharp-shinned hawk crash into my window this week. It was marauding my bird feeder, and I suspect that it had a bird that turned that way, and it turned that way, and then couldn't avoid the window and crashed into it. And I found it on the ground with its head kind of cocked to one side like it had a stiff neck, and I picked it up gently, and I put it on a perch where it could sit and be safe. And I watched it for about an hour, and at the end of an hour, during the whole time, it was kind of gaining the recovering its consciousness and sort of staring around a little bit and looking at the side lights. And then finally, the fog must have lifted because it flew off. And I'm sure that all of the birds in my yard were thinking, curse you, Mr. Latimer, for saving the life of our enemy. But I felt pretty good about it. Wool grass is starting to turn brown. You can see wool grass just about in any ditch. It's actually a scirpus. It's not a grass at all, but it gets the name wool grass because of the brownish heads that form on it, and it's very, very common. If you're driving down the roads and looking at the ditch right now, you're probably seeing patches of wool grass right there. And along in, mixed into that wool grass here and there, are a few of the purple-fringed orchids. So keep your eye out. These things are about the color of fireweed, but they are much lower and much more compact. So when you see them, they're going to be like this tight cluster of magenta, as opposed to that more loosely structured fireweed. And speaking of fireweed, it is magenta right now, but if you look carefully, most of the magenta color that you're seeing is from the seed pods, not from flowers. It's starting to decline in its flowering. And John Zazada tells me that the first seed pod that bursts open on the fireweed, the first time the fireweed goes to seed, it's 6 weeks till the first snow in Fairbanks, Alaska. So it tends to be a bit longer here, but believe me, it will be a pretty good indicator, and we'll be watching that. I've been looking at speckled alder, the tag alder, to try and see how it's doing, and it has been really, really slowly developing some kind of fruit for this year, but not much. It's a pretty bad year for fruits on our seed pods, seed cones, whatever you call them, on the speckled alder. And northern holly, the northern holly by my house, last year it was just festooned with berries. This year, very, very few. It doesn't look like a good year for berries this year. Horseweed is blooming, and I happened to see a broad-winged hawk sitting on a power line, so it was a good week for hawks for me. That's the Phenology Show for this week. As always, keep your eyes open, and you know, it's never too late to start your own phenology records, so get after it. I'll talk to you again next week.